And now, IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme, the voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
Okay, just to remind you, coming up after 11 o'clock, we have That's Entertainment. Michael and Fionnuala will be in studio with us. It's just a way to ease us into the weekend. It's been a heavy show all week, covering really important issues, and it's nice then just to sort of maybe switch off a little bit and talk about other things. So if you're all people are saying to me, two people have said to me, oh, I've finished Fool Me Once, what can I watch next, and so on and so forth. So if you're watching something good on the telly, you've been to the cinema, the theatre, hey, read a good book, listening to a good podcast, anything like that at all, just to have a bit of a chat about different things. Errigal Creche closed today due to the weather, I've been asked to mention. Hi Greg, I am in Inishowen, and it took me 2 weeks to get a doctor's appointment. Thanks for that, Jerry. Plenty of Irish signed on the dole, done the double, worked the black market when they went abroad. Not all paid tax and worked the system. Hi, Greg. There will not be many tourists coming to Ireland with the prices of hotels and drinks. We're ripped off in this country big time. It must be because of who he is that he and his family are able to get an appointment whenever he contacts the surgery. I've been on numerous occasions unable to get an appointment for the doctor. It's more difficult than when you're a full-time worker, as all the appointments are gone when you phone on your lunch break or afternoon. Greg, another peaceful assembly in Buncrana on Saturday. Next, these gatherings inflame people and do more harm than good, some would see it as. Michael McNamara, the Independent TD, mentioned in the Dáil yesterday, asking how thousands can get on a commercial flight without documentation. Well, they don't. If documents go missing, it's mid-flight. Now, the government now have people at the gates, we're told. But anyway, he is also a barrister and said that it is a criminal offence to come to Ireland with no documentation. Under 4,000 people have come to Ireland without documentation in the past year. Who's at fault here for letting people into the country without documents? Immigration or the airlines? Have you yourself ever been allowed into a country without documentation? No. But they get off the plane and they say, we're claiming asylum, and apparently we have a legal obligation then to process that. Now, does that mean that no documentation becomes secondary? I don't know. I really just don't know. Damien must be one of the very few if he can get a doctor and a house to rent all at one time. Emer, much more realistic. Another, everyone talks about climate change and says it's the farmer's fault. It's the government's exporting good quality meat to import poorer quality products. The government exporting products to get a higher price and import cheaper products. As a young farmer, it makes me very angry how we're treated. And I would love to speak to more young farmers. And their age doesn't matter. But just to give us all a reality check. Another, so many doctors working in Donegal from other countries. Sudan must supply the most foreign doctors to this country. We should welcome people from abroad willing to work. Young Irish people going to Australia and Dubai. It's a lifestyle choice, not because they can't get work here, but the biggest problem is housing, that not enough accommodation is being built. I would say that, and I have a lot of young people in my life, I don't believe it is specifically just a lifestyle choice in all occasions. Unfortunately, a lot of young people say there's nothing here for me, or they feel there's nothing here for me. Now, if that's a reality or not, I'm sure it is a reality for some. But it's not just a lifestyle choice. And I'll tell you, by coincidence, while the 10 o'clock news was on, I put a post up, and I can't really relate it, but I'll show it up on my phone here. For those of you who are watching, and it is a picture of loads of Irish people, and they're on the steps of, it looks like the Sydney Opera House, and they're nurses and they're teachers, and on the poster it says, and this was posted 5 years ago, on the poster it says, hashtag give us a reason to come home. So they're over there, lots of them, and they're all young looking, and they want to come home. That was 5 years ago. So I take it, yes, I take your point. Of course people are going for a life experience, but a lot of people feel they've got no choice but to get out. Irish people have opposed mass immigration every time they've had a chance. Opinion polling, citizenship referenda, and now on the streets of our towns. We never consented to Ireland becoming minority Irish. We're a very, 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 very long way from Ireland to becoming minority Irish. I'm not contradicting you, but as I said in Donegal, 1 in 100 people are IPAS. The whilst we have taken a lot of people, and this is just a factual statement, okay? We've taken in an awful lot of Ukrainians and an awful lot of international protection people. There's no doubt about that. And I'm not questioning the pressure that's put on services and schools and on all of that type of stuff. But the idea that Ireland is, or people of Donegal are becoming a minority or can become a minority in any short space of time, it's completely unrealistic. If you don't mind me saying, the only person speaking in sense there is Damien Dowds. Hi, Greg, can you imagine living in a house with Micah, let's say about 2 years ago, when the powers that be say there's no accommodation for you until your home is fixed, and then watching asylum seekers landing and being put up in hotels? I think that was a kick in the teeth too much. And now politicians are making money from empty houses to fill.
Yeah, indeed.
Maybe the reason that lots of protesters have the time to protest is that they all have jobs, like all our government ministers with lots of time off, perhaps. Read the protests. It's quite ironic, the people who are making such arrogant comments. Many have come from other countries themselves and have relatives in other countries, where are half of our young people, Australia, Dubai, Canada and the likes. Pretty much all of the... Not all, a lot of the people that are the faces of you know, the stronger language are, they've been migrants themselves, they're married to migrants, they've got family that are working in other countries, you know, I don't know if that's an irony or not, but anyway. This caller says the issue is in terms on which they come. They need to be allocated jobs, roles and employment on arrival rather than everything handed on a plate, just like those from our own country should be doing. There needs to be much better use of CE schemes and the like. People see it as not being paid enough to work, only on a scheme attitude. The scheme's excellent terms and conditions with opportunities to upskill and medical cards, etc. It's the rollout of it needs development, should be utilised much more effectively. A couple more just before we take the bingo numbers. It's a class issue. Why is there now a barrier around government buildings? They're completely out of touch with the people on the ground, and yes, the workers. And another... Providing a house for Ukrainian family, mother and daughter, they arrived and were delighted and signed a contract. Within half an hour of leaving, three men arrived at the house. And 15 minutes later, the woman texted and said she couldn't take the house. So you have to wonder what's going on there. Last one, just before the break. I'm currently trying to rent a single room for a working person. I take home €540 a week. And people are asking €650 a month plus bills. It's just not practical. Interestingly, just this week, two landlords came back to offer me reduced rate of €500 a month plus bills. So if people refuse to pay this type of money and hold out, it will teach greedy landlords their demands are not acceptable. Caller says people who come to Ireland on a work visa are not being accommodated by the state. A couple on the roads here. I live in Ashlone in Letterkenny and we desperately need grit. Cars are sliding all over the place. My neighbour attempted to get out for work this morning. He was just sliding. People are coming in at Gortley and coming out at the roads across from ATU. It's so dangerous and slippy. And the footpath from Errigal College down to the high road's very slippy. I'm even wearing snow boots and I'm having to walk on the road. De Valera Road's very slippy too. Everyone, please be careful. It's so slippy and dangerous, it needs to be gritted. It might not be gritted at this stage, but I think as things begin to thaw, it might even get a little bit more slippy. Greg, watching you for the first time on our smart TV, you're looking well. Nice shirt. Well, thank you very much indeed. You're looking well yourself. Sorry to drag down the tone of the visuals now. Piers Doherty's shirt, I don't think it's quite as expensive as mine, Piers. You're muted, I think, or I can't hear you. I don't know what's going on. I might have to bring you back in here. I can't hear what you're saying, Piers. So what I'll do is I'll kick you out and bring you back in the hope that that resolves that situation. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 0749125000. You are tuned to the 9 till noon show, of course, and it's great to have you all on board. Right, I'll get to some more of your comments, of course, and we'll start with this one. All of the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael buddies are making a fortune out of taxpayers' money. Not exclusively, but I understand what you're saying. Are these politicians so short-sighted that they can't see the permanent impact of such an influx on a small nation and changes both culturally and economically it will leave in its wake? Okay, Piers, can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Oh,
fine.
And I've got you too, which is fantastic. Okay, thank you very much for that. And your shirt looks fine, by the way. It's not often I get a compliment, so I thought I'd just lean into it. Right, you know, funny, we've been talking about issues of housing over the last hour. It all kind of comes back to housing because we're talking about people struggling to get properties, and then people sort of look to immigration and what we're doing and how we're dealing with that. But I mean, a lot of the shortage in terms of homes or interference in the market, I don't know how you might describe it, is coming from people buying up homes. So what exactly are the figures telling us?
Well, look, you know, one of the things in what's dominating the political debate is the doll returns, is the fact that it's, you know, revealed again that vulture funds are snapping up homes in a large degree. Despite the fact that the government, after they were kind of caught out on this in 2021, promised us that this would be stopped. They introduced what is a new tax or an additional tax on vulture funds buying up properties. They introduced it at 10%. Now, this is something that I was campaigning on for years before there was any publicity. I was putting down amendments to the finance bill. Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil were voting against it because I could see that these funds were buying up properties that they weren't investing in. They didn't pay for them. They weren't financing them. They were just buying them up at the end of the day. And look, the government parties voted against that. But when it kind of spilled into the national media, and there was an estate in Maynooth, if you recall, in 2021, where 135 homes were being bought up by the Vulture Fund, the public really got really, really angry at that, and government had to act. Now, what they did was they designed this tax, which I said was designed to fail. It was never going to stop the Vulture Funds. And unfortunately, we've been proven correct, Greg, because the new figures released to me this week shows that there's 1,205 homes that have been bought by Vulture Funds that just paid this tax. And what they've done, because they paid more tax now, what they've done is they're charging exorbitant rent. So as bad as things are in Donegal, if you're looking to rent one of these houses in Dublin, if your child is up there or your sister or brother's up there, they're looking for €3,175 per month.
So they are they're not discouraged by the tax. They're still buying up these homes, and they just pass on that tax to the customer. And presumably, the way this works, they're doing it to make money. They're taking the opportunity for people to buy these houses at a low price, first time buyers, for an example, and then they're putting on their premium, their investment, and that tax, and then the purchaser or the renter obviously then having to pay way more than they would have ordinarily.
That's exactly it. And like we argued when the government were kind of caught out on this in 2021, and they said they were going to introduce this, what we were calling for was an increased stamp duty, but they set the rate at 10%. We says, look, that these funds have what's called a return of investment. So they have a kind of number that they are looking to get. So if they buy for X, then they need to charge Y to get this kind of 4% or whatever percentage that they are targeting. So if we just make the property a bit more expensive for them, what they do is they just increase. So we increase X, they'll just increase Y, they'll increase their rents. And we've said that the problem with 10% is that's exactly what will happen.
How does 17% though? I think you're proposing a tax of at least 17%. So how does 17% work where 10% doesn't?
Yeah, thanks for reflecting that. And our point is that anything below 17% will not be effective. So we think that if you do 16%, it just simply won't work. And it was based on return of investment and what we thought was the pinch point, and we talked to experts at the time. But the key thing, as I said, the point is it's at least 17%. So if it needs to be 25% or 50%, so be it. That's not an issue. The issue here for us is we want to stamp out this practice. Stamp duty, by increasing it to a level, can stamp out this practice. And that's what the motion before the Dáil is, and what people will be voting on this week. And there's it's kind of, in a lot of politics, sometimes, you know, there's nuances and, you know, there's unintended consequences and all this here. This isn't one of those. This is a very black and white issue. This is a really, as I said, this is a choice. People need to make a decision. Which side are you on? Are you on the side of vultures, or are you on the side of people who are in homes? And what happens in Dublin, unfortunately, it's not just Dublin, it's Galway as well, and other cities, impacts on house prices in other areas. So this is a very, very black and white issue. And we're very clear on this here. Like, I strongly believe that government is on the side of vultures. They allow them to continue to buy up apartments without any restrictions whatsoever. In Dublin, 70% of all homes in Dublin that are constructed any year are apartments. And they, as I said, they've introduced this measure that is designed to fail. And they've been told, Greg, like, so if you listen to, if you're sitting at home and you listen to when this story broke and you heard the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, and he says, oh, we need to look at how this has happened. Or Darragh O'Brien, oh, we need to examine this here. They know exactly what's happening. Like, they're trying to take us for fools. The Department of Finance told the Minister for Finance last year in the tax strategy papers, these papers are published in July, they're available to anybody to see. They told the minister that vulture funds are still buying up homes in their hundreds. And they said that the measures that were introduced in 2021 are simply not working. Like, this isn't new to government.
So you've picked a figure of at least 17, but what you're saying is that it has to be whatever it is to stop this practice altogether. It's not that you want to make, it's not that you believe the state can make more money out of this through taxing the vulture funds. You actually want them to be taxed out of doing this completely, whatever that figure might be.
Exactly. So this is about a ban on vulture funds buying properties that should otherwise be available to first-time buyers. Entering the market, or those who are buying up or trading up from a two bedroom to a three bedroom house or whatever. That's the intention here. When this broke in 2021 publicly, the government said that was their intention as well. Well, I'm saying that if we're putting you to a test, you know it's not working. I think the public anger is going to force them to move again on this here, but they need to now move at a number that stops this practice. So if you introduced 100%. That's a ban, because nobody's going to pay, from 450,000 for a house to 900,000 for a house. If you introduce a 50% ban or a tax, that's also a ban because, you're not going to be able to pass that on. 50% is not going to work. But obviously, the higher that number is, the more sure you're going to be that it's a ban.
What is your take? Thanks for that. What's your take on what's happening at the moment in the likes of Ross Grey and elsewhere? And we're going to see it again. Anti-immigrant protests or the government's way of dealing with this might be a better way. Some people might find it reflects what they're doing more fairly. What is your party's position at this point as to what is going on? If you're in government today, what, if anything, changes?
So I think Ross Grey, obviously, I think anybody who's seen the scenes in Ross Grey, and people drew comparisons to Holy Cross, and that was the images that people had in terms of young kids and being walked in, and I just that's not acceptable in my view. Like, I've had children myself. They're a lot older than that now, but nobody should have children in that situation. And people who are coming here obviously are in many cases fleeing war-torn countries. So they've already made that journey. They're already fearful, not knowing where they're going, all of that. I just don't think that is appropriate. And we've said that those type of protests should not happen outside of where people are now living. So that's the first thing. So I think that's very clear. The second thing is Ross Grey is an example of a community who has welcomed people for international protection and Ukrainians into their community. And there wasn't an issue. There wasn't protest. They've supported people coming in. But government policy is completely wrong here, Greg. And it does need to be called out. Government policy is dictated only by where the premises is to house these. And we know that there's a lot of greed. We know that there's a lot of money being made on the back of this here. Government policy is not looking at these
But there is a continuous influx of people, okay? And there is, at the moment, an obligation to house them. If in government, Sinn Féin, I presume, would meet that obligation, but where would you house these people? Or would you try and limit the numbers of people coming into this country? Because, as I say, if you were in government today, you still have people getting off planes who we have an obligation to at least process. So what actually would Sinn Féin do differently?
Yeah, so there's a number of things. First of all, we do need to have a very strong rules-based system, okay? So this idea of open-door policy is just nonsense and not acceptable, and nobody supports that. But we need to have a strong rules-based system. But that means that when people are here and they're processed, in the process, it needs to be done a lot, lot faster, where it's we're slipping now in terms of times, in terms of processing people. But when people are processed and they've gone through the appeals process and they've given a deportation order, we need to know that they're being deported, Greg. Like, you know, we can, when the government talks about there was so many deportations, in the main what they're talking about was letters were issued. Like, we got figures recently that showed that there was, I think it was hundreds of people in state-sponsored accommodation that has deportation orders. Like, that doesn't make sense. Mm. Yeah, we have what, 600 people lying on the streets in Dublin at 90 degrees. Who have to have their applications processed and they have nowhere to go. So we need to tighten up the system. We need to look at the designation of safe countries and to see whether that needs to be expanded. But crucially, to go to the heart of your question, there needs to be a proper plan. Like, 2 years ago when the Ukrainian war, it's nearly 2 years ago now, broke out, we were told by government that we could be expecting up to 200,000 refugees. Now, we haven't got that. It's about half that. But there is no plan. And like, if you look at like areas like Donegal, for example, our own county, look at South Donegal. South Donegal has what, 8% of people in South Donegal, 9% of close to between 8 or 9% of people in South Donegal are either Ukrainian or people looking for international refugee. That is a huge proportion of people in any community. But then if you look at places in the Midlands, in some cases, it's less than 1%.
So fundamentally, then, the only difference might be, and the government would say they do have a rule-based policy in, you would speed up the processing of people, you'd make sure those who shouldn't be here are actually deported, and you would spread the numbers around Ireland a little bit more fairly. I mean, is that really effectively what, because a lot of people are saying, look, we need to stop taking anybody in here because we simply can't absorb the numbers, but your party wouldn't go that far.
No, well, first of all, in terms of those seeking refugee status, you have to, it doesn't matter whether they're coming from America or France, the international rules is you have to.
But some say there is this sense, though, that there's an opt out, that we opted into this and we could opt out as other countries in Europe had. Would Sinn Féin be in favour of opting out of this?
What we've, in terms of Ukrainians, that is a separate matter. And there is a major issue in terms of what's happened in terms of Ukraine, because some of the and some of this has been dealt with in terms of legislation, the supports that are provided here are way out of kilter with what's happened in the rest of Europe. The idea that we gave, this order, which has been renewed once now, it comes to an end in March 2025. And we're saying very clearly that shouldn't be extended. You know, that this order means that Ukrainians do not have to seek international protection. They automatically have the right to stay here for a period. And that means that even if they aren't fleeing war-torn Ukraine, it may be a case that they moved out of Ukraine many years ago and they've been living in Germany for a while. Now they're moving. That, so that isn't appropriate. Like, if you're fleeing a war, you should apply for... system. And if you're not coming from a place that is war torn, then you do need to go back to your to the place where you originated from. So there are things that can be done in terms of tightening up.
But there still is an awful lot of people that
city can absorb a certain amount.
Yeah,
we had no issues in a lot of communities when Ukrainians were coming in or IPAS refugees were coming in. But when the last hotel goes, and when we look at the, you know, the big impact that it has in terms of tourism, then communities start to wonder.
Well, I get you, but just the last question though, Piers. Last question, if you don't mind. I've taken up more time than we asked of, but. Of course, you talk about what might need to be done against Ukraine, in the Ukraine situation, I beg your pardon. What you talk about, you know, people that are coming here from countries that aren't war torn, but there still are going to be thousands upon thousands of people coming from war-torn countries, from maybe they could be fleeing a climate crisis, whatever it might be. So they are still going to come to Ireland and be able to make an argument to stay. You're saying your party won't change that. You still will continue to accept people who are genuinely seeking protection. That will continue under a Sinn Féin government, and you'll have to come up with ways of housing them.
So what we're saying, Greg, and Ukrainians are the largest portion of people who are coming here seeking protection, and they're coming through this order, which they don't have to go through a process. What we're saying is that should not be renewed. We should not be providing a carte blanche in relation to that. And that those who are fleeing war from Ukraine should obviously be accommodated here and supported here in all the ways that we have to meet our international obligations. But we cannot provide this kind of what has happened in terms of the European order, which will come to an end next year. And our government should not be looking to renew that in a different form. We need to be preparing now for actually the processing of applications. So we had this before. So Kosovo was an example of this before, where there was a temporary order provided where people could come from Kosovo. 1,000 people came at the time. So it was a smaller number compared to Ukrainians. 75% of them went back. 75% of them went back after a period of time. So there needs to be preparation in relation to the plan, but there also needs to be a plan about how is areas that are have got like a quarter of a percentage of their population are international protections. How are they going to absorb what are the plans there? Because we can't just leave it to private operators, and some of them are dominant in the system, where they identify another property in Ballyshannon or Bundoran or Donegal town, offer it to the department, and the department are desperate. They're absolutely desperate. So they accept it without any reference point to capacity in schools, education, hospitals, GPs, the impact it's having on the tourism sector. That just simply can't happen. Like, I'm very much of the view that every community has an ability to absorb and welcome. And we've seen that in the past. But like, you have to have a plan here. And government have a plan. The plan is let the private sector decide. And no matter, and that's what happened to Ross Crane. That's the farcical situation where we're in now, where the department go into a contract to take the last hotel in the town, close down that hotel for ordinary business, and now they're talking about buying another hotel for the community. Like, you just couldn't make this up. This is kind of laughable. Whereas they should be looking at not just the availability of premises, but also the impact that this could have in a community. Okay. And we've said this, I've said this very strongly, myself and Patrick McLaughlin have said this to the minister over and over again in relation to that you're not looking at capacity issues, and that needs to be factored into your approach.
Pierce, listen, thanks very much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. That's Sinn Féin Deputy Pierce Doherty there on vulture funds coming in and buying up houses, and also to what their policy might be in terms of dealing with immigration. I think mainly particularly IPASS, it seems. IPASS applicants, people seem to have a particular concern as to how that's being dealt with. But anyway, those are the questions. Those were the answers. All right, so you're welcome back to the programme. Jennifer is with me now. Hi, Jennifer.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Now, you sent in an email on an issue that you're having with the planning department. What's going on?
I'm looking to plan a build on our house on our land.
Mm-hmm.
And the planning department came back and asked for further information that I was close to a standing stone. I did some research on the standing stone. I looked at other filing applications in the area, and it no longer exists. As per an archaeological report, I contacted planning, and my architect actually sent the report over, or talked to them also about it, and I've been told that I have no choice but to redo the report, that they're fully within their rights to request it.
So
the report costs between 900 and 1,300 euros.
Right, but they have an existing archaeological report on their files.
Yes.
But
it doesn't matter, or it doesn't seem to matter.
So they want you to do another one as well?
Yes. All I keep getting told is that they're fully within their rights to request it, even though I have a report in front of me saying the standing stone does not exist.
Right, okay. So surely then you would imagine that this archaeological report, the previous one, would have updated whatever the system is to reflect the fact that this standing stone no longer exists, rather than it have to be continually proven that it does no longer exist.
Exactly, that's my point.
No,
but I don't know where I'm supposed to go with this information. And I contacted my architect last week, and I keep getting the runaround and told the exact same thing, that they can ask for whatever they want, and that I shouldn't really say anything, because there could be repercussions, or they'll just deny my planning.
Yeah.
Well, and then it'll cost me more money, and I'll still have to do the report.
Okay. Now, is it a point of principle here that you don't believe you should have to, but if you wanted to, you could commission another report. It could cost up to €1,300. You could resubmit your application. Is your point, why should I have to do that?
Absolutely. I feel like we have to pay enough money. If this standing stone existed and was within proximity to my build, I would do it because I believe in historical preservation. But at the end of the day, we shouldn't be kept over a barrel and have to spend money that's not necessary.
No, and there's obviously a fault in the system if the records of where these stones are aren't updated when an archaeological report is accepted to prove that it isn't there. So you're being, I mean, theoretically, forever, people could be paying €1,300, €1,300 to prove this stone no longer exists.
Exactly. And I guarantee that I'm not the first one that's had to fork over this money. I spent 2 days researching my local area and all standing stones and filing applications to just to see if other people even that are closer to this supposed standing stone actually had to do it, and they didn't. And I also queried that with planning, and they were like, well, it's our choice to ask for it.
Right, okay. Well, we'll make inquiries. We probably will get the, you know, we can't comment on individual cases, but we'll make the inquiries nonetheless, and hopefully it raises up. I'm sure the planning department will not look unfavourably on you just for highlighting this. You're perfectly entitled to do that, and it's no insult to the actual staff themselves. You're calling out the system, and I'm sure this won't work against you. But leave it with us, Jennifer. We'll find out, see what the story is. It seems really bizarre. Why do people have to continuously prove the standing stone no longer stands in this area?
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care of yourself. Have a lovely weekend. Hi, Greg. Did Pierce ever get car insurance prices to come down after 10 years of waffle? I don't know. What's your premiums like? I got a quote for my insurance. Maybe it's just because I'm old now. I got a quote for my insurance for €350, which I thought was really good. Now, I'm not saying it's because of Pierce Doherty. It could or couldn't be. I don't know what the story is. But €350, which to me, because I used to pay €678, seemed pretty good. You know, but that was just my experience. And I'll tell you, and I might not go with them, but it was through an app that a lot of you out there might have, that you lodge money into the app and you can spend from there. Revolut, actually, I might as well just say it. They're doing car insurance and they quoted me $350, which was $100 cheaper than what I'm paying currently or being offered currently with another insurance company. But then again, you have to see everything that you get with an insurance policy. But I was quite surprised, actually. Pierce is there talking about vulture funds. The average person in Donegal doesn't know what a vulture fund is. An uneducated person like myself doesn't know. He needs to speak in plain terms. Well, it is a investment fund. In this case, there was a number of houses that were bought in... let me just get the info for you. So there were 46 family homes built in Belcamp Manor in Balgriffin in Dublin, just for an example. So this investment fund, really, so it is, maybe they invest in terms of people's pensions or whatever it might be. This investment fund said, right, there's 46 new houses. They came in and bought the houses, right? And then they become, this is their business then. So they either sell them on or rent them out as an investment. So they're called vulture funds because, or it's probably an investment fund of the vulture funds because vultures swoop in, don't they? And they sort of pick at the carcasses and what have you. So that's where they get their name. So, but what it is, it's an investment fund. And a lot of people with a pension, maybe their pension is being invested in investment funds like this, as an example. And they generate money by buying up these houses and then charging first-time buyers or Irish renters higher rates. And then that drives up the market as well. So that's kind of if that helps. I've probably made it even more confusing. I hope I haven't, but that's what a vulture fund stroke investment fund is. It's hard to believe that the 13th of March will be the 7th anniversary of the murder of Danielle McLaughlin. Danielle would have celebrated her 35th birthday on the 4th of February. There have been 231 232 hearings of the Daniel McLaughlin rape and murder trial taking place in South Goa. Andrea Branigan is Danielle's mother and is with us on the programme now. How are you keeping, Andrea?
Okay.
Okay, right. So this trial has been ongoing since the 4th of July 2017. And I think we can only imagine what it must be like for you, what you're going through, especially so far removed. But what's the situation now in terms of any progress, Andrea?
Last July, they fast-tracked the court case that they gave a deadline that it has to be finished for this July. So things are progressing quicker than they were. Like, there's been two court hearings this week alone. So it's more positive. The judge doesn't seem to be taking any nonsense from anybody. He's always produced now in jail at court, whereas before he wasn't produced.
So he wants
so
this...
It's starting to look more positive.
And the judge sounds like he wants this done and dusted. It's gone on too long. So you're saying the defendant, he is appearing in court now as well?
Yes, he's appearing now too, as a female judge. That was... She was given to the court case and a new public prosecutor last July as well, because there is no jury in Goa. Mm-hmm. So the judge will decide the verdict. And he is always attending court now. I think he's missed once.
So the Irish and UK embassies have travelled to Goa this week to meet with the police and you would hope to the public prosecutor. What's the significance of those meetings, do you think, Andrea?
Well, I'm hoping that it's maybe to even get it progress even quicker than it is. They're meeting it today, so there. They arrived in Goa yesterday, so I haven't no word yet how it went today.
Are you being given any indication as to when a verdict might be delivered in this, Andrea?
They're saying July this year.
And I mean, between then, as I mentioned, Danielle's birthday's on the 4th of February, the anniversary of her murder on the 13th of March. Tough months. It's always tough for you. I know that, Andrea. And then this wait to July to find out once and for all if justice will be delivered. Are you confident justice will be delivered in the courts?
Since last July and how the court case has been progressing, yes, it would be now. It's the first time I've been more positive than it was.
And again, just to remind us, when there is a court hearing, you're not able to watch it, are you? You have to wait for your legal representatives to call you and relate what went down.
Yeah, we're not allowed to watch it, no. I have requested numerous times to view it, and it's been rejected every time.
I take it if everything moves as we hope it will you go to Goa for the sentencing or for the, sorry, not the sentencing, we have to have a verdict first and then potentially
final
the
final hearing. The final hearing, yes. I'm hopeful I will, yes.
Right, okay. Well, listen, let's just hope things move as it seems they are moving, and it's good the judge seems to want to get this over the line as well, and the Irish and UK embassies are still involved and having those meetings as you've described. Okay, Andrea, we'll speak to you, of course, over the coming months, and we'd fingers crossed that this could finally be it for you in terms of this part of the loss of Danielle. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care of yourself. Bye-bye. That's Andrea Branigan, who's been through an awful time. I mean, obviously, if you lose a son or daughter, as many of you out there will know how that feels, that in itself is devastating. Then the circumstances of the passing, another thing to have to deal with on top of that. And then struggling to get justice in a legal system in a far-flung part of the world where you're only sort of told what's going on and you're trying to track it, and there's been so many frustrations over the last 6.5 years with just with how the system over there is working. So hopefully now this new catalyst continues and a verdict is delivered in July, and hopefully justice is delivered as well for Andrea. Okay, and we appreciate Andrea through everything she's going through speaking to us on the programme. At what stage do we as the island of Ireland say we now have accepted a maximum number of immigrants and we will continue to care for them? However, we have now no more room at the inn, says a listener there. Greg, the Minister, Heather Humphreys, had a cheek with her and the rest of the Dáil only back at work after Christmas on January 17th at 2pm. It seems they also have time to protest with so much time off. Heather reminded me of Joan Burton asking how protesters of water charges could afford iPhones. They go low with the insults. They're not lost, and that means they've lost the argument. Hi, Greg. Will you be having Luke Ming-Flanagan on read the European recommendation? He was the MEP who brought the matter to Europe. Yes, I've been communicating with Luke Ming yesterday, in fact, and I think he's coming on with us on Monday, is the answer to that question. Right, let's take a break.